Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. A Facebook friend of mine this morning said that there is no legitimate conversation to have about women's ordination in the Catholic Church, and yet the conversation persists. Whether or not we talk about it on the air, whether or not you're talking about it around the dinner table, someone's talking about it. Coming up later, we're going to meet a representative of a major movement to ordain women as priests and bishops in the United States, and we'll talk with the Reverend Joan Clark Hauck, an ordained woman bishop who is visiting in Columbus this week. First, I'd like to welcome Dennis Coday, the managing editor of National Catholic Reporter. Established in 1964, National Catholic Reporter began as a newspaper and is now a print and web news source. It calls itself one of the few, if not the only, truly independent journalistic outlet for Catholics and others who struggle with the complex moral and societal issues of the day. Dennis, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
The Vatican recently declared the attempted ordination of women a major church crime, reflecting, quote, the seriousness with which it holds offenses against the sacrament of holy orders. What does that mean? What's a major church crime?
Well, just to put that in just a little bit of perspective, because I think it helps understand the whole issue, is that what happened, this came out last week, and what happened was a fairly routine updating of church laws. And so the Congregation for Doctrine of the Faith, which handles this, had issued a document. And they had a number of things that they wanted to address just to bring things up to date in how they treat church law.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of things there, and the ordination of women, the attempted ordination, was one of the points within that. And what was confusing, though, is at the same time, the other things that got lumped in together with
right.
that, and that was the sex abuse clergy revisions to the code. And so those things got lumped together, and that caused a little bit of confusion, I think. But grave crimes themselves are what the church defines as, you know, grave crimes. I mean, the things that just are not acceptable under any circumstance.
But, you know, grave crimes against society, you go to jail. What does it mean to the Catholic Church when there's been a grave crime? Or what does it mean to a Catholic who commits a grave crime?
Well, see, and again, that's going to be that lumping this together with sex crimes and crimes against confession, things like that, and women's ordination, that was some of the confusion. People talked about trying to explain it. Some of the Vatican representatives talks about that the ordaining a woman is a sacramental crime, whereas sex abuse is a moral crime.
Okay.
And so, you know, a moral crime is going to carry different kinds of penalties than a sacramental crime. The sacramental crimes are going to lead to excommunication from the church.
But moral crimes, not necessarily.
Not necessarily, no.
They went on to explain that declaration was, and maybe declaration's not the right word, but it was not a sign of disrespect toward women. That because that was, there were a lot of women out there that were offended by it.
Right, right. See, and that, I think you're picking up on Archbishop Worrell's statement
right.
from Washington, D.C., yes. And because I think that the U.S. bishops, we have to give them a little bit of credit in that they were attuned to the idea that this is going to cause confusion, this lumping together of all these different things.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the U.S. bishops did is they actually had two separate press briefings after these norms were released.
Right.
And they had a briefing addressing the sex abuse crimes, and then they had a briefing addressing the other crimes. And Archbishop Worrell, Archbishop of Washington, D.C., he addressed the other crimes, and that included the ordination of women. And so he led the briefing by, you know, stating very clearly that they didn't want this shouldn't be seen as a disrespect for women, and that, you know,
by lumping it in with all the other stuff.
Well, just by calling it a grave crime.
Okay.
And you know, because he was you know, expressed gratitude for the women, you know, and he called them, women offer unique insight and creative abilities, and they're, you know, have a incredible strong standing within the church. And yet, he said, you know, he goes back to the teaching that ordination is it's an teaching, the teaching on a male-only ordination goes back as far as the church goes back. And it's always been held that way and always been taught that way. And there's no way it can be changed. And so to try to violate that, in his words, is a serious, grave crime.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820, and my guest is Dennis Cote. He's the managing editor for National Catholic Reporter, and we're talking about the issue of the ordination of women as priests and bishops in the United States. We're going to talk with the Reverend Joan Clark Hauck, an ordained woman bishop who is visiting in Columbus this week later on, and some other folks. So stay with us, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you have a question or comment for Dennis Cote, managing editor of the National Catholic Reporter. When did the movement to ordain women get a foothold?
Interestingly, one of the leaders of the women's ordination movement starting back in the 1970s was a Jesuit priest named James Callahan. He just recently passed away, and in his obituaries that were and appreciations that were unnoted, that he was one of the leaders of that in this country back in the 70s. And so it does go back that far.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're going to be speaking with the director of the Women's Ordination Conference, and I think they trace their history back to 1975.
Mm-hmm.
So it has been going on for some time.
The movement.
The movement, yes. Yes. It took a serious, a more serious turn back about 2002 when in Europe on the Danube River, there was an ordination of a woman priest by a validly ordained Roman Catholic bishop.
Now, ultimately, there are men involved in all of this. This isn't just a bunch of crazy women.
No.
Okay.
It began with a validly ordained Roman Catholic priest, bishop,
mm-hmm.
who ordained the first women. And so they're very clear about tracing their line of succession back through the same lines that any other bishop would be tracing his line back through the Vatican. So there is that. They do draw on that as a distinction.
Is there
as
any
opposed to other organizations or bodies that might be declaring themselves bishops and things like that?
Is there any sense what sort of support there is for women, the ordination of women, within the church hierarchy? In other words, within not necessarily out there in the parishes, but within the management in the Vatican?
There would be very little public support.
Public support.
And there would be absolutely no support for advocating women's ordination. There would be very little support for being able to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because that goes back to 1994 when then Pope John Paul II issued an encyclical letter called On Priestly Ordination,
mm-hmm.
that declared that, you know, that I've got the words here, the church has no authority whatsoever to confer priestly ordination on women, and this judgment is to be definitively held by all the church's faithful. And that effectively stopped all conversation of even talking about it. You know, and since 1994, there's been speakers have been disinvited to Catholic universities because of they advocate women's ordination. Pastoral associates or parish workers have been dismissed because of advocating women's ordination. You know, there's endless rows on websites and blogs about mm-hmm. this whole thing, saying that we can't even talk about it. And
go on.
So in the hierarchy, I mean, anybody that wants to keep his job in the hierarchy is not going to talk about it. It cannot be even talked about.
Are there any other issues like this out there that the Catholic Church basically bans discussion on?
Well, I mean, probably the most popular one after women's ordination would be contraception.
Okay.
And again, that's something that there seems to be no tolerance for even talking about, the use of contraception.
What kind of sense do we have about how many women priests are out there in worldwide now?
I think probably the best bet is the best thing to track that is through the organization Roman Catholic Women Priests, which I think their website is RomanCatholicWomenPriests.org, and they say they have about 100 women ordained as priests and bishops, and then they also have a few deacons ordained. And that's been going on since about, it traces themselves back to the Danube ordinations in 2002, but in this country it has become much more active since, I think, about 2006, I think the date is.
I grew up in the era when girls weren't allowed to serve as well. It was just altar boys. There were no servers, no girl servers during Mass. And Melissa, you were one of the first class of female servers allowed. Melissa, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Yes, I am 33 years old, and I grew up in Catholic school system in Illinois. And in fifth grade was the first year they allowed females to become altar girls, and I was in that class and became an altar girl and served through up through high school. And I just was prompted to call when the reporter stated that in the Catholic Church they didn't mean to offend the females, and that women have never been allowed to serve as priests, and that just goes back to the beginning. And so if they were to change that, then it would, you know, then it would be in violation. And obviously there was some change at some point, since they changed as far as the altar boys and servers went. Mm-hmm. They changed that, although slow. I was just wondering if he felt like it could be possible for that to change at some point.
Yeah, Dennis, are there other parallels out there, examples of things that the church had once said would be impossible to change and they eventually did change?
I can't answer that for sure. I don't know the history well enough, and there are going to be distinctions, you know, where we get really kind of arcane language between doctrine and dogma and guidelines and things like that. And so something like, allowing altar servers as male and female is certainly on a very different level than actual ordination, which is a sacrament and holy orders. So, on the other hand, I mean, the history of the church is long, and there are changes to it. You can trace it, and the women you have on later are going to tell you that they have evidence of history within the Catholic Church of women deacons and priests in the early centuries, and so there is a possibility that it was changed.
Could you explain to the listeners now what is the church's stand on women's ordination, and why is it, what is it in the doctrine or the dogma that prohibits women being priests or bishops?
For detail, I mean, go to that the encyclical from 1994 on priestly ordination, and they cite scripture and tradition that says that only women can be allowed as priests. And that's what it says. The primary reference, I think, is that Jesus picked 12 disciples and they were 12 apostles, and they were all men, and that's where they began. Now the women's ordination conferences, they can cite you references and historical facts that show that's not the full story, but that's where the Vatican begins.
Now the Vatican has said before that they're not going to talk about this anymore, but of course they did last week. Is this kind of it now? Do they really positively, absolutely mean they're never talking about this again?
Well, that's probably a good way to say it. Being a parent with children, I've heard myself say that many times. We are not going over this again. But you know, the fact is, is that there is a strong public support for ordaining women. And I don't think the conversation is going to go away. The latest data that we have of our own, every 5 years we commission a sociological survey of U.S. Catholics, and our last one was 2005, and the data from that shows that 62% of U.S. Catholics support the ordination of women. There's strong support for that in the pews, and I think it's, you know, it seems to me it's going to have to be discussed at some point, and just declaring things as grave sins, people, at least in this country, are not going to put up with that.
Dennis Coday of the National Catholic Reporter, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks a lot.
Appreciate it. We have to take a break. Melissa, thanks for being on the show today.
for having me.
Take care. We're going to have to take a break, and when we return, we have a female Catholic bishop, and we have a representative of the Women's Ordination Conference. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News. Tonight at 8 on WOSU TV for his third Tavis Smiley Reports primetime special, Tavis Smiley travels to New Orleans to capture the mood and spirit of the city's courageous residents 5 years after the levees failed in the wake of Hurricane Katrina. The program examines how New Orleans residents have rebuilt their city and explores what still needs to be done. Watch Tavis Smiley Reports tonight at 8 on WOSU TV. And be sure to get the latest information from WOSU the way you want it, daily, biweekly, or monthly. Go to WOSU.org/email and sign up for one of our e-newsletters. 77 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:22. Some sunshine and some clouds today. Also a chance of afternoon rain and a high of 88. A few clouds with a good chance of evening rain, a low of 68. All Sides continues on WOSU 820, NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the ordination of women or the non-ordination of women or in the Catholic Church. And the way the Catholic Church works it is they're not going to talk about it. They did last week. They called it a grave crime against the church to ordain or be ordained as a woman, to ordain a woman or to be ordained as a woman, as a priest or a bishop. And we've got one of those criminals in the studio right now. The Reverend Joan Clark Houck, Bishop Joan Clark Houck. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Appreciate it. I guess folks often wonder, what do you do when you don't actually have a relationship, a formal relationship with one of the biggest bureaucracies in the world? You're sort of out there. What do you do as an ordained bishop in the Catholic Church when you're a woman? What is your job?
Well, Anne, first of all, I do belong to a diocesan parish, although I'm not permitted to receive communion there. Most of my pastoral work, though, is done among people who call on me, who ask me to preside at a liturgy in their home, or ask me to go to the hospital to anoint someone, or just be there to listen. I do have a liturgy, though, every Sunday morning at 9 o'clock, and there is a group of people who come because they mainly had been hurt by the church and do not feel comfortable or even have real difficulty walking into a Catholic church building.
Also joining us, Erin Says Hannah. She's executive director of the Women's Ordination Conference. Welcome to the show, Erin.
Hi, Ann. Thanks so much. And hi, Joan.
Hi, Ann. I mean,
that's okay.
Thanks for having me.
Just don't call me Amy Fisher. Erin, what is the difference between the Women's Ordination Conference and the Roman Catholic Women Priests in North America? And are there other groups out there?
Sure. First, there are many groups out there. There's actually 16 women's ordination groups in 11 different countries around the world. And a little bit of a difference, though, RCWP, the Roman Catholic Women Priests, are certainly our sisters, is that we're really an advocacy group. So while many of our members have become ordained through the Roman Catholic Women Priests, our role is really to challenge the Vatican, challenge these kinds of statements, and bring around education, whereas Roman Catholic Women Priests are women actually being ordained and living out their lives as Roman Catholic priests. They have parishes, they work in schools, and they also advocate with us, but their role is really to minister and serve people.
I will certainly ask Reverend Houck this, but I, as an advocate in doing what you do, when people ask you this, what do you say? Why do women want to be priests?
Well, women are called to be priests. God calls women, just like men, to serve as priests. So So first and foremost, it's important to listen to that and to work for that. The other thing that we always say is that the Vatican holds a seat at the UN. The Vatican makes an incredible amount of policy and decisions that affect people worldwide, and a lot of those, all of those decisions are made without the voices of women. And, you know, that's a problem. We need to have women in the Catholic Church, just like we need women in politics. We need equal representation.
The Church will say, though, that women are in policy-making positions within the Church and that they do administratively hold some of the highest offices in the Church.
Well, yes, but they don't hold the highest offices. They do have some say, but really most things come from the men. I mean, it's an all-boys club, and it has been for centuries. So, you know, we really need to change that.
We have two folks waiting to talk to us who are out there listening. One is Tim, and you say it's not an equality issue, but one of iconography. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. I mean, I don't know. I'm just, this is more of a musing on my part, but I think I'm a recent convert to Catholicism, and my wife and I were both, you know, we came from a church where women were very much, you know, treated equal, you know, and it was more just sort of a workplace equality kind of issue. Hey, you know, you should be able to be pastor too. And in coming into the church, I think I really not only made my peace with it and my wife too, but actually have come to love the image of a priest as a stand-in for Jesus Christ. And like it or not, he was a man. I have no problem with a lot of images of God being feminine. But Jesus himself historically was a man. And so in terms of the play that is the Mass each week, it seems very helpful to have a man as a stand-in for Jesus. So,
right.
I don't know how you get around that exactly. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, when you perform Romeo and Juliet, I mean, you could do a retake, you know, and cast it as all women, but it would certainly change the original intent of the story to not have a man and a woman. You know what I mean?
Well, Tim, I would say, this is Erin, that, you know, humankind was created as God's reflection. In the divine image, God created them, female and male, God created them. That comes from Genesis 1:27. It goes right back to we are all images of God. And Jesus, yes, image of God, but all the people are, and women as well, and can equally reflect God as a priest.
Okay. Tim, thanks for your call.
Okay.
Take care. We have another call from a listener who comes from a different point of view. And Marie, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for taking my call in. I want to go back a little bit to the previous conversation about changes in the church and history.
Yeah.
Because I've actually been on pilgrimage to Rome and have seen many icons. Interesting that the previous caller brought that up. Of women presiding at clearly Eucharistic meals from the first three centuries. There's also lots of evidence in some of the very early councils about admonishing women about, you know, not doing this or doing that differently, but they are liturgical roles that are talked about. So to say that there have never been women priests is a false starting point. And as far as changes within the church, part of the Roman Catholic tradition is to use that word tradition with a capital T that allows for ongoing changes within the church to be responsive to the people of faith. So we didn't start with seven sacraments. They evolved as the needs of the people evolved. So in a very real sense, I think Roman Catholic women priests and the whole movement to include women in ordination is really more in keeping with the capital T tradition than what Rome is currently doing.
Okay. Erin, Reverend Houck?
I mean, absolutely. Everything that was just said is absolutely true. I have also been to Rome just recently, actually, in June, where we did a prayer service at the Basilica of St. Praxedus. And in that basilica, there are frescoes all over the place showing women's leadership in the early church.
Reverend Hoke, what about that iconic, the image, the Christ-like image of a man?
At the liturgy, the whole assembly is the body of Christ. We're all there together. We are remembering what Jesus taught us. And so we are there as human beings. Jesus is with us as a human, not as a man, but as a human. And it doesn't matter whether it's a man or a woman, but rather it is someone leading the community, the body of Christ, in a memorial action.
Erin, how often do you hear from folks just kind of coming to your organization and saying, I want to help, I want to do something? I mean, what is the movement like right now?
The movement is moving more quickly every day, actually. More people are joining our movement, signing up for our listservs, visiting our website. You know, I think that the people in the pews are over the hypocrisy of the recent Vatican statement. The Vatican had declared, you know, last year from June to June, the year for the priest, where parishes all around the world were asked to throw celebrations for their local priest, when meanwhile they haven't dealt with the sex abuse crisis. It's not an inclusive place for women. It's not an inclusive place for gay and lesbians. And so people are fed up, and they want something new. And so they are joining our movement because it's a welcoming movement, and it's a movement that represents the people. The majority of Catholics in this country support women's organization, and they support the values and belief system that we put forth.
When you're talking about the majority of Catholics, is that pretty much proportionate to the number of men and women who are members of the church?
Well, the majority of members of the church are actually women.
Right.
So, you know, I think it's probably heavier on women because it's the women who make up the most of the church, actually. So,
but proportionately, do a proportionate number of men fall into that category of supporting the ordination of women?
I don't know, Joan, if you have that number. I don't know the breakdown, but we certainly have many men who are supporters.
Yeah.
Erin, I don't know either. I don't have the statistics, but as far as my own personal experience, I find the men coming and being supportive just as much as the women. And the number one supporter is my own husband.
Erin, as far as I can tell, and I may be wrong, but the first ordinations of women occurred in Germany or in Europe, right?
On the Danube River.
Right. Is it more, I hate to use the word popular, more accepted in Europe, the ordination of women?
Not necessarily. It's okay. Certainly accepted in Europe. But we have more women ordained in the U.S. There are, I believe, 100 women who have been ordained through the Roman Catholic Women Priest, and 70 of those women, Joan, correct me if I'm incorrect, are ordained here in the United States. So it's very much a flourishing movement here in the U.S.
That's correct.
Yeah, okay.
And when somebody wants, is it a, I guess, Joan, you can talk about it. Is it a long process? Is it something that somebody comes to over a long period of time? Is it something that you have thought about your whole life? I've been a Catholic your entire life.
I've been a Catholic my entire life. For many women, they have had a calling just like the men. From the time they were small, they felt called to priesthood. For myself, my vocation was to be a wife and a mother, and have been and continue to be. Married 49 years now. And I didn't have a call until I guess I was 53 years old, and I had been working in the church from the time my children were little, and I was being called without realizing it by the people of the community. Even when I moved different locations, people were calling me, and eventually I realized the work I was doing, the call that was there, and I could no longer deny that call.
And where did you go? What was your first step?
when I discovered, well, in my work in the church, I have always attended conferences and lectures and classes and learned more about what I was doing, you know, step by step. And when I finally got to the point where I realized I was being called to priesthood, I went to the University of Notre Dame in South Bend, Indiana, and I received a Master of Divinity degree in 1996. And then from there, I went to Kentucky, where I was pastoral director in parishes that had no resident priests. So from my academic work, I went to experiential work and became priest.
You know, raises a good point, Erin. I was thinking from a strictly pragmatic point of view, there is a huge shortage. Well, that's kind of an oxymoron, but there's a major shortage of priests.
Yes, absolutely. And so, you know, people say that all the time, though I don't believe it's the reason just because there isn't a man for the job to have women. But certainly our parishes are closing. They're closing left and right. And here are women who are called and are here to serve, but they can't simply because of their gender. So, you know, we advocate for women.
How did the church change? Because now women offer the host during Mass. That's very, very common. That's standing in, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't always that way.
No, it wasn't. A lot of changes were put forward, especially after Vatican II.
Right.
That opened more doors for women.
How did they rationalize those?
You know, I am not totally sure. I am, you know, relatively new to the women's ordination movement in that I'm 30. I was born after after Vatican II. So these
way
were
after.
Actually, yeah, were way in place from the time I grew up. You know, I grew up past the second wave of feminists, and I grew up after Vatican II.
Made it through the Guitar Mass era, and yeah.
Yeah, so the only door that's officially been closed on me is, you know, is to the priesthood. When I grew up, women couldn't be, girls couldn't be altar servers. And I never understood. I had three brothers, and they were all altar servers, but I couldn't be. And I could volunteer for everything else. I could help clean up the church. I could set up the church. I could be in the children's choir. I could bring up the bread, but I couldn't serve on the altar. And I didn't understand. And for special occasions, my brothers actually were paid to be altar servers. They received stipends.
Wow.
So I just thought it was this huge injustice, but I couldn't understand why I, who felt as called to be up on the altar, couldn't be. And then as, you know, I continued to grow, I learned about this incredible injustice that why couldn't women equally serve alongside their brothers as priests? So, you know, that's where my experiences come from, and that's where I advocate from.
We have to take a short break. When we return, we'll get to a few callers who are waiting. And if you have a call, 614-292-8513, if you have a question or comment, or you can go to allsides@wosu.org and put that in email form, or you can go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and make your question, put your question or comment there. We'll certainly check it out. I just want to remind folks that Bishop Joan Clark Hauck will be appearing tonight. If you want more information about that, she's appearing in Columbus tonight. We'll have that on a link on our website at www.wosu.org/allsides. Let's take a break now. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. NPR News.
Last week, Congress approved an expansion of federal financial regulation. There are many rules yet to be written by regulators, and the lobbyists are now trying to influence those regulators. On the next Fresh Air, we look at what's in the bill, what it means for financial institutions and consumers, and what the lobbyists want. We talk with Binyamin Applebaum of the New York Times. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. See the new lineup of public affairs programming Friday nights from WOSU TV. Starting at 8 is Washington Week, followed by Columbus on the Record at 8:30. Continuing at 9 is the McLaughlin Group, and at 9:30, PBS presents Need to Know, a new program with an innovative broadcast and web approach to news gathering and reporting. Watch the new public affairs lineup every Friday night, beginning at 8, on WOSU TV.
Support for WOSU comes from the law firm Isaac Brandt Ledman & Teeter, offering legal services to Central Ohio since 1936. Isaac Brandt Ledman & Teeter, big enough to win, small enough to care, on the web at isaacbrandt.com.
77 degrees in downtown Columbus, clouds with a little bit of sunshine today, also a chance of afternoon rain, and a high of 88. A few clouds tonight with evening rain, a low of 68. All Sides continues on WOSU 820.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest in this segment is Bishop Joan Clark Hauck. She was elected bishop for the Great Waters region of the Roman Catholic Women Priests in North America. It is a group that is not recognized by the Vatican. Thanks again for being with us.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. How did you decide to press this issue instead of just wait for change?
And I really believed that the church hierarchy would change the rules and women's ordination would be possible. When I went to the University of Notre Dame to prepare for priesthood, I went with the idea that the church would call me forth officially and ordain me in the cathedral.
You really thought?
I really thought. Not right away, but I had told others in the program out there at Notre Dame that I would be ordained by the time I was 80. I'm 70. The church, the official hierarchy of church, has 10 years to get it right. What I did was I went to where I could function and use my pastoral skills in whatever way I could while I waited. And I did that in Kentucky. It was a very rewarding time, but it was also a painful time because when I went to the hospital as a volunteer chaplain, I could not anoint people. When the priest didn't show up for Sunday morning liturgy, I did a liturgy of the word, and I gave out communion from the tabernacle. There were people who wanted to talk with me and who really would like to have had absolution and confession, but I could not do that. These things were really painful because there was a need. The people were calling on me, and I could not respond because I had not been ordained. I did what I could. Then in 2005, I went to a conference in Philadelphia where Dr. Patricia Friesen was speaking. She's from South Africa. She had been a Dominican nun, and she was ordained a priest through the Roman Catholic Women Priests and then a bishop. And Patricia, being from South Africa, had experienced apartheid. She had even gone to prison for violating apartheid laws when she would not send the blacks and the coloreds away from her school where she was a principal. She saw that everything they tried did not work until they broke the law. And when they broke the apartheid laws, eventually apartheid went away. And she said that this law in the church, Canon Law 1024, that says that a baptized male only can receive sacred ordination validly. She said it's an unjust law. We have been petitioning the Vatican since the Second Vatican Council in the 1960s. And we have not been able to change anything. As a matter of fact, we were told we can't talk about it. It is unchangeable and end of story. So she said, if we cannot do anything to change this law, and it is an unjust law, it is a man-made law, not even human-made, it's man-made by the only people that have a vote in the church, and so therefore we must break it. And my husband and I were at this conference together and became very clear that I needed to go for ordination. That's how I became ordained in 2006.
614-292-8513 if you'd like to speak with Reverend Houck, or you can go to allsides@wosu.org and email us. But right now, Peggy, you're on the line. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I just had a somewhat amusing story back in, I think it was 1970. I was about 18, 19 years old. And the priest at my Catholic church had given a wonderful lecture about how it was wrong to belong to an organization like a country club that discriminated against people who were either Jewish or African American. And I'm taking this in, and, you know, he says it's not just enough to be against it. It's wrong to be quiet and silent and participate in those country clubs. So after Mass, I went up to him, and I told him how much I agreed with his sermon, and that when I saw the first female priest, I would be back.
And you left?
Uh-huh. I haven't been back.
Wow.
You know, except for weddings. I go to people's weddings and things like that, but no. And my children aren't baptized, and I don't regret it.
So. Joe?
I feel sorrow. I really feel sorrow.
I don't. I mean, I honestly don't.
Yeah, I know. I encourage women and men to stay with the church and use your voice, even though you don't have a vote. We have to keep speaking out against the injustice, and we must change it. And I'm so disappointed by my church, the church that has done so much good in the world, and can do so much more if we only get it reformed. And so I wish you were one of our reformers.
Well, I think I've made the right decision for me. I have to admit I'm not very religious at all anymore. So maybe it was something that would have come to. But at the time, I certainly was. And, you know, it never made any sense to me. So I'm glad you're out there.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Peggy.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And Larry, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You disagree.
Hello?
Hello, Larry.
Yeah. I do not judge any of these participants. I certainly do not question their experience or their education. It's very extensive in that. My only point is this, that it should be said that they claim to be Catholic bishops, Catholic priests. They claim to be in a diocesan or Catholic parish, but they are not within the Roman Catholic Church. It would be like me claiming to be a Boy Scout leader and not belonging to the Boy Scouts, or claiming to be a lawyer or doctor, no matter how much I know about the law or medicine, but yet not having been accepted by the bar or the medical association. I can claim these things, and that's good. That's fine for dialogue and that. But in reality, I'm not within the medical or Boy Scout or legal profession. So,
okay.
And I think it kind of misleads people who maybe aren't totally informed on this issue to say, yeah, I'm a Catholic bishop, I'm a Catholic priest, I belong in a Catholic parish, as if within the Roman Catholic Church there are these little enclaves that have female priests and bishops. There is not within the Roman Catholic Church these enclaves.
Okay. Well, Joan, you want to respond? Thanks, Larry.
As far as being a Roman Catholic, I've always been and I always will be. I have not taken myself out of the church. I do disagree on the teaching about women's ordination. And I believe it will change just as other things have changed. We no longer have slavery or usury or, you know, we do believe that the earth rotates around the sun. A lot of things that people at one time were persecuted for in the church has changed.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting that you aren't Roman Catholic. If you're baptized Roman Catholic, you're Roman mm-hmm. Catholic. And you have not removed yourself, or the church has not removed you from the church. You have acted in a way that separates you from following the teachings of the Roman Catholic Church. Here again, if I was a Boy Scout leader and I violated policies and that of the Boy Scouts, mm-hmm. I would effectively remove myself from being in the Scouts. Well, not the Scouts may not kick me out, but by my actions, I'm not going to live by the the Boy Scout rules.
That's a good point, because the church does say you're automatically excommunicated. So, Larry, thanks for your call. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
If you're excommunicated,
I am going to remain in the church. There are a lot of people who, if they followed the teaching closely, would never be able to go up to communion. For instance, all those people out there who disagree with the church's teaching on contraception, they should not be going to communion. Many people would say, well, they're not really Catholic because they don't follow Catholic teaching. So they're in the church. I'm in the church. And as far as my being a bishop, I'm a bishop in apostolic succession. The first women bishops were ordained by active male bishops in Europe and are in apostolic succession, and I follow in that same succession. So in the future, it'll all be sorted out.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And I just want to remind listeners that Joan Clark Houck, Bishop Joan Clark Houck, will be at the Maple Grove United Methodist Church tonight at 7 p.m. Go to our website for a link to that for more information. And Susan, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I appreciate what you all are doing. I, however, think it will be a long time before the church changes in this regard. I don't see patriarchy at the center of the Catholic Church. I see misogyny. I think women are hated and feared. There was just a recent papal ruling. Nuns, sisters throughout centuries have passed on Reiki training. I mean, that's where Reiki comes from. It's not a New Age thing at all. It actually comes from Catholic nuns.
I didn't know that.
And they passed it on through the generations. And the Pope has just recently issued a statement forbidding them now to teach anyone Reiki, to practice Reiki. It's seen, you know, again, we're seeing, I'm surprised they're not still burning us at the stake. That's all I have to say. And I think we are seen as the black hole.
It's that 24/7 news cycle.
Yeah, the black hole men fall into and never recover. And I don't see that changing in the church. And while I respect and appreciate their sincerity, I would also encourage them to be somewhere where they can be celebrated and honored for what they do, and that I just don't think is ever going to be the Roman Catholic Church. Thank you.
Susan, thanks for the call. You do think there's hope?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I see it in the people. I see it. I see the spirit moving.
You see it. Let's see. I think that Susan agrees with you. Susan, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi. You say, how can the church exclude women?
Yes. If you look at the scriptures and see how Jesus was with women, Jesus surrounded himself with women in all of his ministries, spreading the good news, traveling to people, talking, doing miracles. There was a group of women along with the men. So he showed that men and women were equal with him in the work of spreading the good news. And he first appeared to a woman, Mary of Magdala, after the resurrection and told her to spread the good news. And the early fathers of the church called her the apostle to the apostles because she alone was chosen for that important witness. So I want to ask how how can the church do what it's doing when it's so clearly the opposite of the way that Jesus treated women?
When these kinds of arguments are presented to the church, what's the response?
The church goes back and says that, well, Jesus did not ordain any women. Jesus did not ordain anyone. So Jesus called people, and people responded, and it was both men and women. As far as mentioning Mary Magdala, I'm glad that came up, because tomorrow is the feast of Mary of Magdala, and many groups around the country, Catholic groups and other groups, are celebrating Mary Magdala and who she is, and as the apostle to the apostles in the church.
Thank you very much for your call, Susan.
Thank you.
We just have about a minute left. I want to try to squeeze in a few more calls. Kathleen, you want to know why they just don't start their own church? Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ann. I was trying to get my blood pressure down from Larry, and I agree with the last couple of callers that you've had. Yeah, but that's okay. I am an ex-Catholic. I will never, ever be a Catholic again. And I admire what these women, like previous callers, have said, but I do not think that the patriarchal, authoritarian church as it is today or even in the future is ever going to change. And I thought, if these women are so determined, and I admire that, start your own. Everybody, you know, you don't need the Pope's okay. And I just think it would be interesting for them to investigate that. And I will take your comments off the air. Thank you.
I just, before you answer that, I just want to remind folks that we did, of course, ask the Catholic Church to be on the show today, and we always would. And it's an standing invitation as far as I'm concerned. So I'm sorry. Go ahead, Joan.
There are a lot of churches out there, many churches and churches doing good work. I love the Catholic Church. Even though it's a church made of humans and a church that has a lot of sin and failings, I think it is reformable, because I believe that the Holy Spirit can move to reform the church. And if the church is reformed, it has the potential for doing good throughout the whole world. It's a wonderful opportunity with resources. It can have a moral voice once again, but it has to get its credibility back. And I think if the church stood up for the status of women and against the discrimination of women and lead in this way, the status of women could be changed all around the world in all the different cultures.
Thank you very much. That's all the time we have. My guest has been Bishop Joan Clark Hauck. She is a female Catholic bishop with the Roman Catholic Women Priests in North America. She is speaking tonight at the Maple Grove United Methodist Church. You can go to our website at WOSU.org for more information on that. Thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Also with us today, Erin Says-Hannah, Women's Ordination Conference Executive Director. Sorry I didn't have a chance to say goodbye to her. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820, NPR News.